Good afternoon. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on this Wednesday, November 9th, 2022, day after Election Day for the midterms. Grim, let's just say. I don't want to say grim, but not good, not what we were expecting. Anyway, I am Hank Jones, as I said, listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio. It can be found on blogtalkradio.com, along with our other shows. Starting Monday, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. That goes at 6 o'clock Eastern. Then 6 o'clock Eastern on Tuesday, Eric with the Cross and Crescent discussion. Me, of course, on Wednesdays. Then Thursdays, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report, also at 6 Eastern. And then Fridays around noon Eastern time, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m., until midnight Eastern time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue, which continues his Cross and Crescent discussion. That's around 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays. You can interact with us all the time, though, at least with our show. Email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com, or go on to Facebook and just type in Hank Jones Polysports. Guess what? It'll take you to my meager Facebook page, or go to Twitter at HPolySports today, other than running the show, because there's just a, kind of a somber mood, no doubt, but it shouldn't be that somber, but it is. I mean, we were expecting a tsunami, and I think what we were expecting was a winning the Senate. So anyway, I'm sitting here in Electric Hankland with the little Aussie. She is fed. She is jumpy. She's actually resting now a little bit. I got to tell you, we got us a tropical storm coming. So if for some reason I were to drop out, it is what it is. If I drop off, I think Mike and Indy could actually keep talking. I could try and message them and see what's happening. But if I lose out, hopefully not here yet. We got half a day, but we're having rain and stuff, and with our backyard where our electricity is in the back, there's always tree work being done and stuff. They're morons. Let's get to the obits. Actually, we had no real deaths this week. So we had death, lots of it, too much of it, obviously. But really what we had this week was the death of dignity. But more importantly, especially in places like Pennsylvania, we had the apparent death of all logic, reason, and indeed intelligence. We saw a state elect a man to the Senate who has no business taking the stage for public debate, no business driving a car, hell, no business riding in one without knowing there's at least a few bathroom stops along the way. Look, I say this not to humiliate John Fetterman. His party, his campaign, his big media lapdogs already did that in the senatorial debate with Dr. Oz. Look, Oz was no prize candidate, but he is an actual medical doctor. He is reasonably intelligent, and moreover, he had enough respect for John Fetterman's dignity not to go after him during that debate, or at least not in the way he could have. But citizens of the state of Pennsylvania, you have cost our country dearly. At a time when every media outlet outside of the U.S. makes daily observations of just how feeble-minded our installed president is, you now add to that by electing a man who simply isn't capable of executing the duties of the office. So, yeah, today we mourn the death of intelligence, the death of simple observation, and indeed the sense of honor and dignity that goes along with voting in our elections. As a consequence, there's no internet laughy today. There's no inside jokes. There's no sarcasm or snark. I mean, we have none because Pennsylvania, you destroyed the concept of humor, at least for one day. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service for your after hours or special phone messaging needs, your medical clinic, your hospital clinic, your service company, plumbers, electricians, roofers, especially now in Central Florida, government agencies that need work. you have surveys that you're doing, all that. They get the job done. They can work with remote staff. And especially at a time like this, when a lot of offices would have problems, they're scattered, so they can stay up and running. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or visit them on the web, lionscommunications.com. Actually, we do have one Internet Laffy from the Babylon Bee I just saw pass across. It's actually kind of funny. It says, Fox News calls Arizona for Stacey Abrams. Yeah, okay, let's get right to it. Let's bring in Mike and Indy Hawk. Got them in there. How you guys doing?
Doing well,
Hank.
Well,
how are you?
Oh, not bad. You know, kind of like Indy said in the chat room, could be happier, but what the heck? I mean, this is our election, not so special. Let's start out with a lighter heart and talk about some Hawkeye basketball. The exhibition game and now the official opener are both in the books. What have we seen and what do we like? Indy, start with you. What have we seen thus far? What do you like of what you've seen?
Yeah, it's early. I mean, I thought the young kid at the point, Dante Bowen, shows a lot of quickness. I always go into to an Iowa team. You know, I don't get as up as I used to because our defense is just historically it's always bad.
Yeah.
We look like we can score. I just think we have some athleticism issues at several places. I mean, just people that aren't. And so if we can do well in the Big Ten, I think we can be, you know, fifth, sixth, somewhere in there, fourth, fifth.
Yeah.
It's when you get against those quick teams. You know, we're quick athletic teams. We're going to struggle, I think.
Yeah. So, Mike, what upperclassmen have impressed you, Mike? Of our veterans? Yeah, of our veterans, who's impressed you?
Well, you know, it depends on how you define that. I think Chris Murray looked good, and I think Tony Perkins looked good, and I thought Philip Rabaka looked good. Yeah, it's first game of the year against a little bit lesser opponent, but, you know, it's good to see that. And, yeah, I actually thought Peyton Sanford, you know, I guess I wouldn't necessarily call him a veteran, but he was around last year.
Yeah, he's an upperclassman.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought he was good. And I think it was a good move by Friend to start him instead of, say, Connor McCafferty. Although I will say McCafferty – I know Indy Hawk kind of knocked his shooting, but apparently the guy since the first of the year has been shooting 40% from three-point range. So that's a true improvement. And
that's almost like dividing by zero improvement, I mean, infinity or whatever it is.
Well, 40% from three-point range is nothing to laugh at. And
yeah,
he had a couple of nice threes in the game. But I do like starting Sanford ahead of him. I think that's, you know, makes Iowa a little bit better.
Which freshman
and,
impressed you?
Well, I think there's some potential there with that DeSante Bowen. I like the way he looks. He's very quick. Indy Hawks are worried about our quickness, which I understand that. He certainly is not the problem. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised. He got a lot of PT I think that was good. I think they want to bring him in. And the other guy, Dix, played some, not as impressive to me. DeSante Bowen's a little bit – he needs to smooth some of the edges out, which is not surprising, you know, true freshman, just first game.
Yeah.
But he's got real potential. I think he can be a good player. He's very quick, and he just kind of changes the dynamic a little bit, I think. And we'll see how he progresses.
Yeah, Indy, same for you as far as the freshman. You think DeSante Bowen is really the one to watch?
I think we can get pretty athletic. I mean, if you move Perkins to the two, he's a tremendous athlete. Yeah, he had a great game. Bowen and Perkins and, you know, we got to get, you know, Patrick McCaffrey rebounding. Hopefully he's going to be a lot better. Rabaka, that was a great look. He looked good, but he always rebounds really well.
Yeah,
so that helps a lot there. So yeah, I think there's some potential there. It's just we have a lot of, you know, when you've got, you know, O'Connor's not very athletic. Chris Murray, I'm back up a bit. I think the team's got to completely go through Chris Murray. I know they want to.
Yeah.
They don't think he'll be a Keegan, but you know, I think
he can be pretty close.
Absolutely. he's being picked all the time as the second or third surprise or in the NBA draft, first round, and you're like, okay, where is that coming from? This guy only played like 17, 18 minutes last year.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a Keegan jump. The Keegan-Murray jump is just incredible. He goes from a part-time player, maybe 15, 18 minutes a game, to the number two pick in the NBA draft in 1 year.
Yeah.
So it's like they're predicting
and
that
I think,
again.
I think Chris Murray came very close to going pro, which tells you, I think it was a close call. I think that, we're fortunate to have him back. And I think the anticipation, he's first team preseason All Big Ten for a reason. I think he showed, his presence out there to me is akin already to having Keegan in. I mean, we'll see if he can, but I mean, I thought he just looks that good. And even if he doesn't have a high scoring game, he takes so much away in terms of the other team's defense that it opens it up for other people.
Yeah. So, Andy, what worries you about the defense? I mean, I know it's never been a Fran hallmark, but what worries you specifically about our defense?
Yeah, well, it's the Fran hallmark for sure. I don't have it in front of me right now, but, man, we finish worse than 100 every year in defense efficiency. And you can be a run-and-gun team. It's per possession. So a lot of run-and-gun teams can have really good defenses. I don't know if I don't think he teaches it very well, but he also hasn't, we haven't had great athletes. That's why I'm a little bit encouraged with, Perkins, and I hope we end up with Perkins at the two, and Bowen, if he comes through, Ulis is a pretty good athlete. Ogundele, we've got to get him on a different meal plan. I don't know if he's a courier or where, but I was hoping he'd lose some weight. He looks like he's been having a good time.
He's not hitting the salad line.
Rabracha, 10 rebounds in 22 minutes. I mean, he will bring it. So that's good. That gets back to the old Hawkeye days with Ed Horton, Roy Marble. We just cream people on the boards. That'd be fun to get back to that.
Yeah. How about you, Mike? What worries you?
It's early. We've got a young team. I think there's a lot of talent, but you do wonder how they're going to develop. They got some tough games coming up in the preseason pretty quickly. I think we've got Duke, we've got Georgia Tech, we've got Iowa State. I'm leaving out one or two, I think, that could be tough. These are all going to be in December, or starting even late November. Yeah, in a way, though, that's good because it always, it's how you're playing at the end of the year. And sometimes playing a tough schedule, even if you drop some games, it can give you a little savvy, especially if you're a young team.
Yeah,
but we're probably going to take some losses early, but hopefully it's something that we can build on and get better.
Well, let's talk about that schedule a little bit. It is tougher than usual, at least in the McCaffrey era. Well, frankly, anything since like the Tom Davis era. In November, we get Seton Hall, Clemson, and Georgia Tech. And then, as you mentioned, we start off December with Duke and Iowa State. Then we have one early conference game with Wisconsin. And then we have a couple more non-conference after that, and then get into the conference. So, I mean, 10 non-conference games, what are your expectations? If you had to right now guess what our non-conference record is, what would you guess, Mike, if you had to guess?
Well, I can see certainly from that we may take 3 or 4 losses. Hopefully not more than that, but, I think you'd be prepared for that. But as I said, early in the year, losses to some good teams aren't killers. It can actually make you better and prepare for the Big Ten season.
Yeah. Andy, if you had to guess, what do you think the record's going to be, non-conference?
I'm hoping for, maybe 4 losses would be good. I mean, this really is an amazing schedule. I mean, you take away Omaha in this run here. Well, it's Seton Hall, then Omaha. Then here's the next games: Clemson, Georgia Tech, Duke, Iowa State, and then Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They better be ready to go,
Yeah. I think, Mike, you make a good point, though. I think the conference schedule won't be as much of a bear going in. Now, what does make you wonder is, are some of our younger guys that need exposure, are they learning by fire now, or are they going to get at least a couple of these, you know, the, you know, one or two? I mean, I think our next – is our next game Omaha? North Carolina A&T, Hall, then Omaha.
Yep.
But
Right. There's going to be some games. Like, this was a good game for a lot of the you know, Sante Bowen, Dix, some of the other Tyler Ulis played a lot. They were able to get a lot of playing time in because of the way the game went. I don't know that Chris Murray played hardly at all in the second half.
Yeah, you can't, you know.
Yeah, I'm really excited about him.
Yeah.
I mean, is he, I mean, if you had to say, and you know, there's so many ways to measure it, but is he going to be the same type of impact player, and is he going to be as good a player as was last year, do you think? I mean, do you think it's there?
I think he could be a shade behind. Yeah, I think he could be a shade behind, but not far behind. I mean, if you take his numbers and just double them from last year, he was getting it done last year. It'd been nice to see what we could have done with them side by side. But the thing about Keegan was just the rebounding. He was relentless. I mean, he was one of our best rebounders. That's hard to replace. It's kind of like, you know, we went into this football season, okay, we got pretty good lineup, but we lost Linderbaum, who had one of the highest, you know, rankings for a center, and the line wasn't great last year. And you're kind of like, okay, are we doing the same thing again? We just lost Keegan Murray, and he brought a ton to this team, and he was a go-to guy. But I hope Chris steps into that role. I seriously think he's probably the third best player ever at Iowa, or he will be before he leaves. I think he's going to get, you know, maybe in the top 10 in the NBA, but definitely a great player.
Okay. And, Mike, what do you mean?
What I want to see from Chris is where he needs, you know, and again, you know, he didn't play 18 minutes a game last time. But I like to see him just, you know, become the player Keegan was inside. And that's the thing that I think, you know, I want to see develop. Because, I mean, he's got a great shot. He's every bit as good an outside shooter, I think, as Keegan. Maybe even a little better, as good as Keegan was. But Keegan was so dominant inside. So we saw a little bit of glimpses of that in the game, I thought, in the first half. And, you know, hopefully that's where he's going to have to develop. I think I have every confidence that he can do that. I agree with Indy Hawk that I think he's got as much talent potential there as Keegan has. Keegan brought it for real. Let's see if Chris can do that.
Okay, Mike, do we make the NCAAs?
If Keegan has an off day, we shove him in the lineup, pull Chris out, give him a rest. Yeah. Who knows?
I think
exactly the same.
But I think, I think we do make it.
Okay. Andy, you think we make the NCAAs?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay. Good enough. Okay. So
they're friends. But...
Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably get another first round exit, but what the hell? That's what we're used to anyway. Okay, so let's get out to the.
What happens once we get there.
Let's get out to the CFP. We had a big shakeup this past weekend. We knew it was going to happen. I mean, with the Georgia Tennessee game, but in addition to Tennessee losing, we also saw number four Clemson bite the dust at Notre Dame. Bama went down to LSU in that overtime of that very gutsy 2-point call by Brian Kelly and the staff. What was the biggest shock for you of those two? I mean, of any of the games, what was the biggest shock? Indy, what was your biggest shock?
I think LSU was huge. A little bit surprised at Clemson, but I'm trying to figure out if we can get two Big Tens in there, Michigan and Ohio State. That'd be kind of fun, but I don't know if that's possible. I've seen a couple people predict that it could be possible, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if the two of them have a really close game. And, you know, and the winner of that game goes on and obviously will dominate the, you know, the Big Ten championship. And there's other stuff that's got to happen. But I think a one-loss Michigan or Ohio State is every bit as worthy as, certainly more worthy than a two-loss Alabama or LSU, but whatever, you know.
Yep.
Tennessee would be the wild card, you know, what happens to them.
Yeah.
because they, you know, they've got other games. Like somebody said about Tennessee, they get, you know, they got a game this weekend. It's against Missouri, but like somebody said, they've got to make sure they don't lose to Georgia twice. You know, they can't let that hangover, you know, do that. So, Mike, how about you? Did you were you shocked by either the way Tennessee lost or by LSU or Clemson LSU winning or Clemson losing? Any of those shocking?
Yeah, I was actually. I was surprised that that Tennessee was didn't play a better game against Georgia. I thought they would, I was pretty surprised about. I thought Notre Dame might pull the upset, but Notre Dame I thought really kind of, you know, took it to Clemson, and this is kind of the problem I've always had with Clemson, is they kind of cruise through the regular season and it's been easy for them in the ACC, and they've had some very good teams. I'm not saying they haven't, but they haven't been, they didn't get challenged a lot. And you know, maybe we should have seen this coming. They barely beat Syracuse. They had a close game with Florida State, who's not particularly strong. And they just, you know, really had their hat handed to them in South Bend. I think to pick up on what Indy Hawk was there, what you guys were talking about with Michigan and Ohio State, I actually do think there's a decent chance that we can get Michigan and Ohio State into the playoffs. I think if it's a close game in Columbus at the end of the year, and the fact that it comes at the end of the year, it's a close game, that the loser of that game has a real shot of making it. But, yeah, I mean, you have to see how things play out. TCU could well go undefeated. That could be a
they play Texas, you know, this weekend.
Wedge into things.
Yeah, they play Texas this weekend. Number 6, Oregon plays number 25, Washington. Bama plays Bama plays Ole Miss. So you know, if Ole Miss wins that, then Bama's really out of it, obviously. You know, I mean, it's one of those things. It takes 3 losses to knock Bama out, just like it takes 3 to knock Notre Dame out, it seems like. But that's still a game that, you know. The only other ranked matchup is UCF and Tulane. That's really only for a New Year's Six Bowl for the Group of Five. So anybody that you think needs to be on upset watch this weekend, Mike, of those, you know, I mentioned some of those. You think TCU and Texas could be a game or no?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think it could be a game. I think TCU's got the edge, but they are a good team. But,
yeah, how about you, Indy?
I think that's maybe the big danger.
Yeah, Indy, how about you?
Yeah, I think Texas has a good shot at him.
Really? Okay.
I think Quinn Ewers is playing this week, so he's legit.
How about Oregon and Washington? Indy, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, Washington's not a bad team.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see Washington do it. I tend not to think it's too likely, but it'd be really fun to see this fourth spot just, you know, have it be wide open. And when do they expand it? Start next year?
Yeah, next year.
I think maybe 2 years, aren't they?
Yeah, 24. I think you're right.
That way you can incorporate the expansions in the SEC, and the Big Ten.
So, you know, SEC technically doesn't happen until 2025, I thought, but I could be wrong on that.
Oh, I thought they were looking at it probably being in 2024.
Oh, maybe.
But
okay.
You may be right. I think it was. It doesn't have to happen until 25, but there had been a lot of talk that they might try to get it done by 24. Especially, I think, with Southern Cal and UCLA coming to the Big Ten in 24, there'll be some pressure to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly enough, the Big 12 got a really good TV deal. I mean, they got like a $2.5 billion deal. Not bad, you know, for them. I mean, I thought they were, you know, everybody said they were going to be on the, you know, they were going to be done, but obviously not. So I'm happy for them, at least a little bit, so for the Big 12.
Yeah, TCU has a lot of close games on their schedule.
They do.
They can be picked off for sure.
Let me look at that. I looked at their schedule before, and then for some reason didn't follow through.
They beat Okie State by 3. They beat Texas Tech by 10. Kansas State by 10. Kansas by 7. SMU by 8. They've got a lot of, you know, one-score wins.
Yeah. West Virginia by 10. Yeah, Texas Tech. So, yeah, and then they've got Baylor, and then they close with Iowa State. So wouldn't that be fun to see Iowa State have a big win?
They could lose all 3.
Yeah, they could. I mean, technically speaking, they could.
Iowa State got on the winning track last week, so after, I think, 4 losses in a row. So it's good to see the Cyclones win.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, it's what's tough about that is that, you know, it makes our loss to them look worse. I always hate that in years where we lose to them, and then they, you know, if we have a decent year even and they suck, it's like, you know, they hang scoreboard on us all the way. So,
yeah, I would like
to see,
because you remember, like, in 82, it seems like every year Iowa State beats us, they typically will have a bad season. I have to look and see if
That happened in 02. Remember the only team we lost to in 02, great team with Brad Banks and Del Clark, was Iowa State.
Like 99, 2000, or 2001, they actually had decent years during that 5-game win streak. But, yeah, for the most part, they beat us.
I actually saw Iowa State in a bowl game down in Phoenix. I think it was in 2001 where they had Sage Rosenthal as their quarterback.
Yeah,
they won the game.
Wasn't that like the Insight Bowl or something against Minnesota?
Yeah,
or was
and
that...
I think they beat Pittsburgh, I think, is who they beat. And Sage Rosenthal was their quarterback, good quarterback. He had played a few years in the NFL. And that was a team that won, I think, with the bowl game, maybe 9 games, which was probably one of the best Iowa State teams in the last up until a couple of years ago with Campbell.
Yep. So, okay, we're hitting week 11. Mike, I'll start with you, Indy. Let's hear your CFP teams. Who are your 4 teams right now?
Oh, my. The 4th ones. I'm going to go Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia.
Okay.
Wow, this is tough. That's going to be – I'm going to say maybe Tennessee gets back in there. I'm expecting TCU to lose.
Mike, how about you?
You're talking about after this week.
If you had to predict, who do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to stay the same. I think TCU's. I mean, they could certainly lose. I'm not discounting it, but you're asking me who I would pick. I'm going to pick TCU to win that game over Texas. So I think we're going to see the same as we have this week with Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU.
I would go with Michigan, Ohio State, and Georgia, but I'm going to say it's either going to be USC, UCLA, or Oregon. I think that's going to, you know, somehow that's going to play out. Something that I think a Big 12 team is going to sneak in. If one of those could stay with one loss, I think they might get in. So
it'd be 3 Big 10, Frank. UCLA or USC.
That's true. Okay. Hate to do it, but we got to get on to some politics, to some governor's races. Indy, any surprises for you? Are you governor races that were really a shock to you?
Just the overall was pretty disappointing. And trying not to be too down, but yeah, I don't think any of them really, really surprised me. I didn't follow the governor races as close. But I was expecting them out of there 30-20. It's probably going to be, 27-23 or 28-26-24.
Mike, how about you?
I think that probably the best part of the night for Republicans was the governor's races. And I say that with a pretty good done a good look today, and if you've looked at it lately, I think Carrie Lake's going to win in Arizona. When I went to bed last night, she was like down 170,000 points, about 10 points, because they were having all the vote troubles in Maricopa County. But they had a whole bunch of dumps overnight and a little bit today. That race is down to 4,000 votes. It's just been really moving toward her.
Yeah,
I think
and there's only 66% in at that point.
Right, there's hundreds of thousands of more to come in. And that's because what we're seeing is a lot of the same day vote that they were having troubles with.
Yeah.
And so that's coming in. And I think even Masters, it's not over yet. He's cut it. He's behind. It's going to be a tougher road to hoe, and I'm not predicting he's going to win, but it's too – I think it is. Let's see how all these votes come in. But I'm pretty confident that Kerry Lake's going to win.
Where do you think we end up, Mike?
In the governor's?
Overall.
Yeah, I think that – yeah, I think 28. I think it would be 27, 20. I think Kerry Lake wins. I think we get 28, 23 – or 28, 22. And so, you know – a lot of the governors were the bright spots. You know, the stuff didn't go well in New Hampshire, but Sununu won big in the governor's race. Beto went down in flames. Abbott won re-election in Texas.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. DeSantis was the Republican star of the night.
Yeah.
And he and Rubio both carrying Miami-Dade and that was the biggest bright spot of the night was Florida. Unfortunately, the rest of the country didn't go quite as well. And it was the whole night was disappointing to me, obviously. I think it was to all of us. But I don't want to get to the point where I jump off a bridge. It does appear, been looking at this pretty closely, that Republicans will take the House, although a hell of a lot narrower than I thought. But I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere in the 223, 224 range when all is said and done. There's a lot of races out there that are in flux, but I think that's – I feel pretty confident we're over 220 and probably up to 223 or 4, which is a bigger majority than the Democrats had this Congress. And the Senate is not over. I think Black Salt's got a good chance of pulling that out in Nevada. That'll be 50. And then I'm not discounting Masters yet. He's gone from being 18 points behind when I went to bed last night to being about 4.5 points behind with hundreds of thousands. So there's obviously been a big sea change.
Yeah.
And then Herschel, of course, is officially going to a runoff. So, there's still a chance there we can take the Senate.
Yeah. But, I mean, here, just on the governor's side, I mean, Tudor Dixon losing to Gretchen Whitmer. How did Whitmer win? How did Hochul hold on, you know? I mean, and it wasn't like she only won by a point or something. She won, you know, pretty comfortably. Then again, by hearing everything else, I kind of thought that Kim Reynolds might lose, which didn't happen. I mean, you know, wasn't, you know, really even close. I'll tell you what shocked me. DeSantis winning the way he did, he absolutely demolished Chris. You know, just bitch slapped him. I mean, I said last week, Chris' campaign became a real mess. You know, his campaign manager left. He thought he was funny on some stuff, and he wasn't. but also, Kemp pretty comfortable, given how close the Senate race was, Kemp pretty darn comfortably over Stacey Abrams. I mean, I almost think it was a voter rebuke of her, you know, just, it was just like, shut the hell up. Even those that support her, you know, are almost like, just shut up anymore. You know, you're annoying. You're not smart. And you're friggin' hypocrite. You know, remember she talked about the whole Georgia voter thing. And she actually pushed then for the All-Star Game. She actually, behind the scenes, pushed for the All-Star Game to get pulled from Atlanta last year. And then, of course, later on, she starts fighting for it publicly. You know, I mean, I think people saw through that. So I don't know why in other states that didn't happen. But frankly, though, DeSantis, if anybody gets drafted for the 2024 nomination, I got to believe it's him. I, as much as I want him to stay governor of Florida, I got to believe if they pull – you know, if the party bigwigs get together and say we can't go with Trump, I think it's DeSantis that they bank on at this point. So,
well, can I say something on that point just real quick? And as someone who voted for Trump twice, thought he was a great president, did a lot of great things. I really think for the benefit of the 2024, the Republicans, we need to go to somebody like DeSantis, a new generation now.
Yeah.
Trump has become such a lightning rod. And I think part of the problem that happened last night was his endorsement of certain candidates did not do us well.
Yeah.
In some Senate and governorship races. And
I'll talk about that. Hold off on that, Mike, because I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about some of that later in one of the other races that's not a governor's race. But hold on to that thought, because it's exactly what I'm saying. Steve Scalise was on Fox today. I just happened to hear him on the radio a little bit. And he mentioned, he said, look, I think the party needs to support Donald Trump the way the Department of Justice has gone after him, the way the January 6th Commission. I think we need to be supportive of him. But he goes, it might be time for him to step aside. And then somebody mentioned, you think DeSantis. And Scalise, and I forgot who the guy on was, that pointed out, said, you know, think about Obama. You know, Obama was a senator, but, you know, there's no time like the president. You don't just hold off because you got to finish out a term elsewhere, you know. You strike
right,
while the iron's hot.
And I think DeSantis, what you get with him is a younger version of all the policies of Trump. You know, he's magging his policies, and he's great without the baggage and being such a lightning rod. Now, let's not have any illusions. Ever the Republican nominee is, and we've already seen it with DeSantis, they're going to be viciously attacked by the Democrats and the mainstream press. But I think DeSantis is very good at parrying that. And smoother, and he just represents a younger, sort of, you know, more dynamic. You know, Trump had his great run, but I don't know if we need him running a third time. I say that with the knowledge that he's likely to be the nominee. I don't even know if DeSantis would be a task to run against him. You know, and if he does run, I'm sure I'll vote for Trump, of course, over any Democrat. But I do worry that he can win.
Back to the Arizona race, Mike. Are you shocked, one, that Lake and Hobbs are so close? Does that shock you that it's become that close that quickly?
No, I'm not, because I think when this is all settled and done, that I think Lake could have a pretty good margin.
Yeah, and what about Hobbs? Hobbs has done some things as Secretary of State that make you question her ethics and her ability to, you know, if it comes down to it, she's Secretary of State. You know, she's controlling some of that apparatus. Isn't that kind of scary?
Yeah.
If it comes down to a close,
and she refused to recuse, she wouldn't recuse herself either. And here's the problem too. The problems they were having in Maricopa County, which is 60% of the Arizona vote, huge county. I used to live there for years. The same day vote, which was where the problem was, you know, processing and all the stuff that came out yesterday, heavily Republican. And that's why as these votes now are coming in, she's been able, like I said, it's basically a tie now. 4,000 votes out of 2 million cast. I feel pretty confident that Kerry Lake's going to win by probably somewhere 50 to 100,000 votes when it's all done. But we'll see. But, the way Arizona does it, and it was a problem in 2020, it's sort of like California. They just, with all the mail-in stuff, it just trickles in.
Yeah.
And I think there's a problem that we saw last night that I hadn't really occurred to me, but I heard someone talking about it today, and I think it's a really valid point, and that is throughout the country now we have a different voting system where you don't have an election day. You don't even have an election week. A lot of times it's an election month.
Yeah.
And so the Democrats, for cycle after cycle, have been getting all these mail-in ballots and early voting done, and Republicans still vote are coming out on election day. So what you have is Democrats – are voting over 5 or 6 weeks, and Republicans are coming out and voting one day. I think I don't like the system, but as long as that system's in place, I think Republicans need to do a better job of using it as well, because I think that gives the Democrats a huge structural advantage when we don't make the effort to try to do what they're doing.
We'll get to more of this because I have some more thoughts on it, but I really want to get it to it when we talk about the House and the Senate races because it's a more of a national thing. Let's jump back into some sports. Let's just talk about the Big Ten surprises last week. Indy, any surprises for you?
Well, the most pleasant one was the Hawks. I mean, they look pretty good. So this is the team I think we thought we had.
But let's drop the Hawks for a second because we will get to them later. So, other surprise. What else jumped out?
I was surprised by Northwestern giving Ohio State such a good game. They really, I guess every great team's entitled to have an occasional lackluster day. And then the key thing is, do you still win? So Ohio State did. But that's surprising. We saw Iowa handle Northwestern. I thought Northwestern looked really poor. I was really kind of shocked about the troubles Ohio State had with them.
Well, the weather in that game, I don't know if you saw any of the footage, I was just crazy. Some dude kicked a field goal into the wind, and it was coming back towards him, not coming straight down or back towards him at the end. So it was crazy weather. And Ohio State's taking some shots for that, but sometimes you got to win ugly.
That's right.
Yeah. What about the Illinois-Michigan State game? Nobody surprised by that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Illinois seemed to be on top of the world and being talked about as a CFP spoiler, and at home against Michigan State, who's missing like 8 or 10 guys.
Yeah, what's tripping Illinois up is that they were 7-1 going into that game, and now they're 7-2, and their two losses are to Indiana and Michigan State, and those are bad losses, and Illinois had a high, I think, and they maybe still do have had high aspirations. But when you drop those two games, it's really becoming like a what might have been season. I still hope they win the Big Ten East because I want the Hawks to win out. But I'd love to see Illinois have to play Michigan or Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship.
Well,
yeah, it's hard to get to be that school where you got a target on your back. They're used to, they haven't been there for a while.
Yeah.
So
well, guess what? Guess what? Guess what? Reared
it.
Could say fake injuries. Getting away with that. I just don't get it. I mean, that came up again during that game. But the bell still blew it. I mean, $100 bell. So I don't know. But like you mentioned to the West, do you think do you think Illinois holds out enough?
You're cutting out a little bit on me, Hank. Can you hear me?
Yeah, he was cutting out on me too. I think I got the gist of what you're asking. I think I don't know. I think is your question. I think I feel much better about Iowa after the last two games. Next Saturday is going to be a big game. But Illinois, I'm trying to recall who they have left. I think they have to play Michigan.
Yes, they do. They have to
and Purdue, and then I would, that's going to be an interesting game because Purdue obviously had a lackluster performance against Iowa, which I think Iowa deserves a lot of credit for. But then Illinois coming off the Michigan State loss, they're both going to be looking to bounce back. So I think Illinois is going to have a dogfight against Purdue. And then I think they lose to Michigan. I think they need to lose two of their last three, and then the last game is Northwestern. I think they could lose to Purdue, and then if they lose to Michigan, then all of a sudden somebody like Iowa or Wisconsin, depending on who wins that game, could find themselves in the big – back to either Iowa or Wisconsin, is the Big Ten champ in the West.
Five teams within one game in the West. Four teams at 3-3. So, Illinois, they're one game ahead. So if Illinois stumbles, start searching your tiebreakers.
Yeah. Well, Mike sort of mentioned it, Eddie, but I'll ask you. I mean, it's partly a jest, but do we want to win the Big Ten West? I mean, would we be just as happy to go 8-4 and let Illinois be the sacrificial lamb? I mean, do we want that kind of mentality?
You're asking me if I want to drive 25 minutes to watch the Hawks get their doors blown off again? I don't know. You're going to tell me that. I think it's always good to get there. I would hope we would represent ourselves better, but we definitely probably would win if we got there. But I still hope we get there.
Yeah. Hey guys, Sue from New Mexico's on the line. I see her raising her hand, so I'm gonna bring her in. Sue, you there?
Oh, hi. No, this is going back to politics. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I heard, and I'm hearing everybody because of DeSantis win in Florida,
yeah.
And Trump is out in 2024. My biggest fear about all of this is DeSantis, I think, would be fantastic, especially for America and what's going on here. But my fear is in foreign policy. What do you see? I don't know him. You know him from your state. Could
yeah.
he stand up to North Korea? Putin, Syria, some of these countries that are absolutely terrifying. And I'm really worried about a World War III coming. And we have plenty of war hawks, I believe, in America who wouldn't mind that either. They thrive
yeah.
on war, and that's been the history of our country. So I guess I'm looking for reassurance because I think you may be right about Trump, but can DeSantis handle the foreign policies? Is he ready?
But don't forget, Sue, before he was governor, DeSantis was a congressman. So he has that exposure. He has worked with other congressmen. He would be working with congressmen that he knows, So there is that aspect of it. He's got more foreign policy experience in that regard than Trump does, although Trump had the business experience, but it's a legit question. Would DeSantis stand up in the primary?
The thing is, it's not about DeSantis' experience. It's about
yeah.
DeSantis' personality, gut, and to do what needs to be done now to pull in these rogue countries that are totally going nuts now. He has the experience. Personally, I don't think a lot of congressmen. That, yes, he has all of that, but does he have the personality to stand up to a Kim Jong-un? That's
yeah.
what is needed now. It has nothing to do with experience.
Sure.
Trump, he has, a sixth sense, and also he is totally fearless in foreign policy. He'll do what he has to do to keep, things in line. And everybody in the world knows that he will. Will DeSantis do that?
It's a great question. I think, if he faces off in the primary against Trump, I think that's when we would find out. That's, it's probably, if he could stand up to Trump in the primary, I think that's, half the battle.
Oh, yeah. If he can make it through Trump, then I think he can, prove himself that I tell you right now, more than domestically, I am frightened for the world. Anyway, that was just what I had to say and what my worries are. And all of you know DeSantis much, much better than I do. And so... Anyway, those are just my thoughts, and I pray that he is that man that, who could go on. I think 4 years of Trump getting the foreign policy, I think by that time DeSantis will have aged, enough and learned enough that maybe, the following 8 years, giving us 12 years of a Republican president,
yeah.
that things could get much, much better. But if Trump doesn't make it, and, there's a good chance he won't, I just pray that DeSantis has what it takes for the foreign policy. Anyway, thank you so much for taking
my
call.
Not at all. Thanks, Sue, for hanging in there. She raises a good point about DeSantis. Does he have the fire in the belly, so to speak, to do that? I mean, that's a legit question that people are going to have to ask, What, and they're going to have to ask it of any guy.
look how he handled COVID. I mean, he stared right in the, down the barrel of the shotgun and said, no, we're not closing. Here's what we're doing. You know, so I think
he stood up
and everything, everything I've read about him, incredibly intelligent. And from what I've seen, he's got that makeup. I'm pretty excited about his potential.
Yeah.
I am too.
Yeah. So let's get to that, since Sue brought us politics. Let's before we do the Big Ten picks, because that way we can do the Iowa picks and I can address, we can get more direct on Iowa. Let's talk about the House stuff. Any House races, Indy, that jumped out at you or anything that shocked you, that people that got reelected or didn't get reelected, anything?
Nothing real shocking. I was disappointed. The race I talked about last week on, you know, Indiana, we lost that in the House, but overall the House, just pretty disappointing, but we got to make sure we're not too negative here too. If we can, we still have a chance to, you know, get the House and the Senate. So
That's right.
Mike, how about you?
Yeah, no, I think I think Indiana's right. Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of disappointments last night on, I won't go through everything, but, it just felt like a disappointment, but on the one hand, but, as I say, I think Republicans will have the majority and, you know, Nancy's going to be what, ambassador to Italy or the Vatican or something like that before too long.
Well, I mean, she's
so
not going
to, and you have to keep that in mind.
You think she'll resign from Congress if she's not speaker?
I think at some point before too long she will. I don't think she at this point has that much of a desire to be minority leader, but, you know.
But
you
did it before.
Right. But she's 83 now, I think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, she might. They're certainly acting like they won, which is interesting, just because they didn't lose as bad as the expectation. They thought they were going to get shellacked, and they only just got beat. So they're acting like that's a huge victory. And I suppose it is from their perspective, but the cold, hard reality is going to be that, the Republicans are going to be running the House and, investigating the president. And, you know, it was always going to be a stalemate situation, even with a larger majority in terms of, with Biden, you know, having the veto power. I was hoping for the Senate. And as I said, it's going to take a while for some of these things to play out. And it may come down to, the Walker race in Georgia, but Republicans certainly still have a shot at taking the Senate. And, you know, if you end up with that, and they've got both houses, well, you know, that's, I think, the effective end of the Biden, presidency. I mean, it's not going to be able to get anything done.
Yeah,
which will be a good thing for the country.
Yeah, I would say the only notice in races, Anna Paulina Luna in Florida, South Florida. You know, she rode that DeSantis Rubio thing, but she got 53% in a district that I really thought could have gone either way. The one I talked about, Catalina Lauf in Illinois, yes, she lost by 11.5 points, but she didn't embarrass herself by any means. I mean, in a state that, you know, is as blue as it is. But the other one, Maxwell Frost, the guy I talked about, the first Gen Z guy elected to Congress, the guy he beat, Calvin Wimbish, probably a decent enough guy, but, you know, if you're going to impress me, come ask for my vote. I didn't see that guy walking houses. I didn't see anything. I saw signs, but he didn't do anything advertising-wise. I just, you know, he might be a great guy, but he deserved to lose if he's not going to campaign that hard. You know, I just, to me, that's...
One thing that was good too was it does look like in the Des Moines area, the one Democratic seat in Iowa, Republicans did flip that. It looks like Cindy Axne, who was the Democratic congresswoman there, is beat. She's a couple thousand votes behind. Looks like most of the votes in. So looks like a Republican pickup, and Republicans are now pulled all four seats in Iowa, both Senate seats in the governorship and the legislature. So Iowa's gone pretty red.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Now, I just kind of thought, you know, some of the races I thought would be different, but Marjorie Taylor Greene shellacked her opponent, and her opponent outraced her by, you know, billions, I guess, but, you know, whatever. So just kind of shocked me. So let's talk some Hawkeye football.
Not a good night in Colorado either. That Lauren Boebert, the kind of like the Marjorie Taylor Greene of the West, looks like she may have lost.
Yeah, I saw that. That's another one that kind of shocked me. But, you know, she stepped in it a few times verbally. So, you know, you can't do that in a place like that. You just can't. So, but, you know, that's bound to happen at some point. You know, we're going to lose some of those seats. Hawkeye football, last weekend. Andy, your observations from the game last weekend?
Well, offensive line played well, and I just it shows just how much the offensive line not performing just permeates that offense. It's the way we're geared. I know we ran a lot of double tight ends, which I was hoping they would do that. I mentioned that previously. We got great tight ends. They ran some double tight ends. I don't understand. I know they have a zone blocking scheme. It takes them a while to pick it up, but man. But that was great to see. It's great, but then you're like, where's that been and why did it take so long? How many different offensive lines have we started? I'd love to know. It seems like it's different. It's not only different every week, but they're moving guys from guard to tackle, you know, moving to the other side. You know, it's like crazy, but.
Yeah.
Definitely good to see. Good, great game.
Yeah.
Good game.
Mike, how about you?
Defense, good as your hit.
Yeah, obviously this was the best game of the year, and I thought the game before against Northwestern was the best game of the year, which it was. But I thought Purdue was going to be a different kettle of fish. It was at Purdue. Iowa had struggled against Purdue in recent years. And Purdue's a truly decent team, I thought. And I would point out that until that game, Iowa held them to 3 points, no touchdowns. The fewest points Purdue scored all year was 20. So that's a real accomplishment for the Iowa defense. And the Iowa offense obviously made strides. The offensive line looked great for the most part. And Caleb Johnson's going to be a true star, I think, for Iowa, 200 yards rushing. And this game against Wisconsin is going to be really good because I think both teams are playing better. After the firing of Chris and they put Jim Leonard or Leonhard, however you pronounce his name, they've done pretty good. And it's games in Iowa City, so I think that's advantage Iowa, but they're both playing well. They both have really good defense. It's going to be a classic Iowa-Wisconsin game by two teams that are playing pretty good and, all to play for. And I feel good about how the Hawks will do. I think the Iowa defense is going to give Graham Mertz a lot of trouble. And so if Iowa can just get a couple, maybe get 14 points even, I think we can win this game.
Yeah. Did you guys notice anything? Andy, you talked about the line. I noticed on several plays, and I'm sure there were some plays where we did, but I'm noticing that our guards and tackles aren't pulling at all, or they're rarely pulling. Have you noticed that? Usually there's some of that. We haven't been doing that, it looks like. It looks like any pull type action is coming from like the tight ends lining up as H backs, or maybe like the fullback doing some kickout blocks. But I was watching it. Somebody pointed out, and T. Bodie and I were talking about it on the phone this morning. It seems like they're just not. I mean, I wonder if they've simplified that. Like if that's one of the things that's, and T. Bodie pointed out. Well, does that mean that they're not, they can't do it, or they're not grasping? I think there are ways that you can adjust that, and maybe that's what they've done. Is just. Maybe that's the difference. I don't know, but, just give them assignments that are easily doable. It boosts the confidence. It'll be this interesting because I don't think that's going to work against Wisconsin with that 3-4. I think they have too many ways to attack our offense if we don't make adjustments. What are your concerns this week, Andy, going into the Wisconsin game?
I think it's going to be a smash mouth. Is it Braylon Allen, the big back? He's going to be – he's a load. It'll be tough to stop. Graham Mertz, for whatever reason, hasn't really panned out. But, our defense, my goodness. It's just I'm amazed at how good our defense is. And you think of that, and it's like, how are we 5-4? Well, it's because of the offense.
Yep.
But this should be a good one. I trust our defense, the only thing is they gave up that 99-yard drive to Iowa State to lose that one, but –
yep.
Other than that drive, I think they are – I thought I saw somewhere they were number one in the nation in yards per play or something like that.
Yeah.
I did see that. The number. I think we may have. Georgia's awful good, but Iowa's top one or two three best defenses in the entire country. I think we know that. If we had a little more dynamism on offense, this could really be a year, but offense is getting a little better. So maybe this will be a little bit like the 2008 year. Remember how that went, where
the
Hawks started off with a bunch of tough losses, and then they got their stride, beat that undefeated Penn State game, I think they won 4 or 5 in a row, and then won big in the Outback Bowl against South Carolina, the Sean Green team. And they settled on Stansy as quarterback. I think obviously that offense was a little better than this, but they're getting a little better, and we've got this Caleb Johnson now. So, maybe they can win out. If they get through this Wisconsin game, I think they have a real shot to win out and be 8-4.
Absolutely.
For the
definitely
game. And I don't know if we really. I know we talked about it after the Ohio State loss. Whether that it could happen, but I don't know that I really had confidence that it would. Now I have a pretty good feeling like we can do that. This is going to be a great game. Yeah, it's just a, late season traditional. There's no team that we play all year. I've said this for years that I want to beat more than Wisconsin. They've taken it to us a lot. The really good seasons, Iowa beats Wisconsin. We've had some really good teams that didn't beat them.
Yeah,
but it's the biggest rivalry game in my mind. That's just me.
Yeah, I agree. So okay, well let's do our Big Ten picks then. We're going to do it differently. We're going to go alphabetically with each pick. So Hank, Indy, Mike, we're going to do it that way. So we'll start with Purdue and Illinois. I am picking Purdue. Indy, how about you?
I'm going to go Purdue as well. And part of it's my heart, but, I want to see that five teams tie at the top of the West. But I do think Purdue is a pretty good team, so that'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah. Mike, how about you?
How can I go against you guys on that? I'd love to see Illinois take another loss, to be blunt. And I think Purdue's going to bounce back, play better, and I'm going to go with Purdue.
Okay. Rutgers at Michigan State. I'm going to go with MSU. I just think that Illinois win and the suspensions, I think, something happened there. So maybe that win over Illinois was real. Indy, how about you?
I'm going to do the same. I'll take Michigan State.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, I think the adversity, that they would have had after what happened in the Michigan game and the fight that afterwards and everything. Yeah. And yet they came back and they beat Illinois. So I think Michigan State's on the up now. I think they beat Rutgers.
Okay, Nebraska, Michigan, do I even need to say anything? Anybody not picking Michigan? How about that?
No.
That's fair. Okay.
Michigan's going to beat the crap out of them. Yeah.
Maryland at Penn State. I'm going with Penn State, but I could be wrong on that one. I don't think Maryland's a bad team. How about you, Andy?
I really like Maryland a lot. Yeah, I want to take them, but I just think Penn State's one of those teams that are just really solid, fundamental. They play tough. So I'm going to go Penn State, but I assume the spread's probably around 7 on this or more.
The Michigan-Nebraska spread, by the way, is Michigan by 31. Purdue, it's Illinois by 6.5. Michigan State by 9.5. Like I said, Minnesota by 30, or Michigan by 31. This one, Penn State by 10.
Wow, that's a big number.
Yeah, Mike, how about you? Who are you going with?
Well, I like Maryland, too. I think they're a good team. But this game's at Happy Valley, and I think Penn State is solid, and I just don't see Penn State losing.
Yeah. Okay, about Northwestern at Minnesota. I think Northwestern got their fluke out of their system last week. So I'm going to pick the Gophers. Mike, or Andy, how about you?
Gophers.
Mike?
Yeah, we saw Northwestern against Iowa. They just did not look good. They look better against Ohio State, but it's up there at Minnesota. Minnesota's a kind of a little bit schizophrenic this year. They look good, and then they've had some real kind of stink bombs. But I just can't see them losing to Northwestern. I got to go with the Gophers.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now we've got it. Iowa hosting Wisconsin. The spread is Wisconsin by 1.5. The over-under is 35. I am picking the Hawks, and I'm picking the under. Indy, how about you?
I'm going to do the same. It's amazing how low these unders are for Iowa. Bad offense, great defense.
And they often meet that expectation, and they're still under. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, how about you?
You know, I agree. I think I'm not going to go against Iowa here. I think it's at home. I'm a little surprised that Wisconsin's a 1.5 favorite. I would have thought the Hawks would be a slight favorite, but I think, you know, over they're going to be under. I think Iowa's going to win it 17-10.
Okay. Would you have ever guessed, by the way, that we wouldn't cover the over-under against Purdue, scoring 24 points ourselves?
Yeah, that's shocking. You could have got a lot of money on that one, Hank.
Yeah.
Could have gotten I mean, I never would have guessed.
It just shows you how truly outstanding our defense is. As I said, Purdue had not been held to under 20 points the entire year. And they have a high-powered offense. Their defense is a little down from last year. That Karloftis-led defense was pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know, Purdue's, you know, was no slouch. And Iowa has not had a good track record in West Lafayette for a long time.
Yeah.
It's always a tough place for Iowa. This was a really good win and a convincing win.
Okay, so now we're going to go with Tool or fool, no big deal. Start with Jack Campbell pulling I forgot who it was, but pulling the guy away from helping Charlie Jones up. Might have been DeGene. Was that cool or not? Cool or tool?
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I think, you know, you're in the heat of a game. I think Campbell was like, hey, this you know, we got to be serious here. We're not gonna, you know, time to pat him on the back after the game.
Yeah.
He was, you guys catch that, the one play where he got up, he was towards the Iowa sideline. He started flapping his jaws, pointing, pounding his chest.
After he got that one long catch. Yeah, he sort of did a shoulder shrug, too. Yeah, I think it was really nice. I mean, I noticed players afterwards were hugging him and stuff, but he didn't seem very gracious even then. I mean, he was just sort of like, yeah, whatever. You know, some people tried to say, you know, one guy made a joke on Hawkeye Report, said, let's face it, Charlie has been nothing but cordial and praiseworthy, you know, praising the Iowa program and thanking them. And then he goes, oh, wait, no, he hasn't. You know, there's a certain, you know, so cool or tool when he made that shoulder shrug? I got to go with tool.
Yeah, tool.
Mike?
Tool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Tool, yeah.
Now, has he said it? Indy, you're in the state, but you probably don't follow Purdue. But do you know, has he said anything post-game? Or?
Nope, I've not heard anything. Yeah, his body language, he was pretty bummed about it.
I mean,
you know, he had a good game, I guess. He had, what, 10 or 12? A lot, other than the one big pass, though, most of his pass receptions were like 5 yards and stuff.
That was like a 46 or 48-yard play. And besides that, he didn't, you know, and he had some drops as well, you know. I mean,
And you lose 24-3. He took a lot of shots in that game. I don't know if you guys noticed, but Iowa hit him hard.
He had a ton of targets.
And I think
a couple of
drops might have been because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted him to have a big game against Iowa. They just went at him all game.
Yeah. No doubt. Okay. Hate to do it, but let's get to the Senate races. Indy, pick a couple that are either shocking or satisfying or...
Well, yeah, Georgia, you know.
Where to begin, right?
Where to begin, Dr. Oz. I think, you know, generally I just think, you know, 75% of voters said they didn't like the direction of the country.
Yeah.
And we just didn't capitalize. I mean, it's amazing to me. The frustrating part is, you know, the Democrats come out and say, it's end of democracy. They put these taglines out a couple weeks before, and then everybody's carrying it. And that's one of the that was one of the biggest fears. I think the one thing that the Republicans underestimated was abortion. That seemed to be a pretty big issue in a lot of places. So I think we got
there. No, I think it's exactly right.
Well, I think also, though. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just gonna. You know, the thing about I'm not surprised that that race went to the Georgia race isn't a runoff. I think it was a little bit of a big. I mean, Walker has never had a huge, you know, lead at any point. I think this has always been a 1 or 2 point either way. If you look at the RCP stuff, you know, it's a do-over now for December 6th. It could be for all the marbles. So, you know, let's just hope that the Republicans go all out here and, you know, don't leave anything on the table, at least when that vote comes. I think, you know, the Libertarians out of the race, hopefully Herschel can pull it out. It's going to be close. But to me, the shock to me was Fetterman. I just thought, and I was thinking about it, maybe there's an explanation here, but I just thought, you know, the way the guy's been, you know, he's not a well man. That debate performance was one of the most disastrous things I've ever seen, and yet the guy wins. I mean that to me is just a shock. But I think Oz just never generated a lot of excitement among Republicans, and that kind of got him a little bit. But and I think also. You can't underestimate the fact that Pennsylvania had this early voting going back into late September, like 6 weeks.
Yep.
And the Democrats banked hundreds of thousands of votes before that debate on October 25th.
Yeah.
And so that, which is a really good argument for not having early voting begin in September.
Yeah, no doubt. That's an obvious shot. Rubio destroyed Val Demings, and I say she outspent him by $25 million, and he absolutely wiped the floor with her. Not quite as much as DeSantis beat Crist by, but darn close. And Val Demings, I mean, as much as she's blowing smoke, she wasn't as bad as Crist was, you know. But still, he just absolutely smoked her. That shocked me. Walker going to a runoff, I figured if Warnock was going to win, he would win it, you know, last night, today, whatever. But Fetterman, I mean, what the hell? What in the hell? Yeah. You know, here's the thing about some of these races.
Yeah, Uncle Fetter.
Yeah. Fetterman made the point. Fetterman was one of the ones that made the point that we would, you know, it would be the, you know, the lead early would be the Republican, but that, you know, they were going to do their regular, you know, election night rally. And it didn't seem like that was the case. The other thing, I think, and this speaks to my thing about Trump, that race in Colorado where he made a big deal about O'Day losing, you know, he came right out and said O'Day lost big, you know. That doesn't help Trump's cause for the party. And
why would you be gloating about that? I don't get it. You know, I mean,
yeah, because the guy didn't support him. I mean, the guy, you know, I mean, but the Fetterman. How in hell did Fetterman win? I mean, it's just to me, you know. You said now Laxalt looks
talking,
like he's going to pull it.
I saw someone talking today I believe it was Fox said. Right now in America, you have probably less in the middle than we've ever had as far as people are polarized.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're
going to
vote
so.
Dem or Republican no matter what. And that's probably a pretty good example right there. I mean, you could run anybody, I guess. Yeah.
I guess he'll make it to inauguration or whatever, swearing in. I mean, it sounds like he will. But, you know, if that's what we're voting on, we've already lost part of the battle, because you know what? There are Republicans that get elected that aren't any better from that standpoint. And you know, we're putting them in. I mean, you could make the argument we kept Strom Thurmond around 48 years too long, you know, as an example.
Maybe he'll run with Biden in 2024, huh? Vice president.
Who, Fetterman?
Yeah. Make them both clueless.
I mean, in Fetterman's case, it looks like, you know, it's not, I mean, it sounds like he has most of his faculty. You know, in other words, he has his thought processes per se. He didn't do any worse in the debate than Biden would have done. I mean, absent Chris Wallace absolutely propping Biden up, of course. But I don't know. I see this, and, you know, we've talked about it on Texas. What is this country? I mean, you know, Grassley won by big, you know, like by 15 points or something, and a lot of people thought that he might lose. But there were actually people that thought Rubio could lose, and he didn't, you know.
And J.D.
What
Vance,
the hell?
Too.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Vance would, and Vance ended up winning by like 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so what the hell happened in Pennsylvania? You know, that's what I don't know. But interesting that Fetterman used his, you know. Here's another thing. T-Boney and I talked about this a little bit. Somebody made the point, you know, the other day, a couple days ago, big media was putting out these things of Russians admit that they have been interfering in our elections. So in other words, they were trying to discredit what they thought was a red tsunami. So now that this has happened, do you think they're still going to talk about the fact that Russians said they've interfered in our elections?
I don't think they'll hear that much at all.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's, you know, if they were touting that before, well, then guess what? It looks like they did, because all the, you know, all the pundits were saying this was going to be a red wave. You know, some did, but for the most part did, you know. I don't know. I mean, I'm just not sure where to go with it. You know, I'm just not. I'm more upset about that race than I would have been if Rubio had lost, you know. I mean, it just seems to me that, you know, what the hell? I mean, if we're really bringing guys, you know, I mean, remember how we used to talk about the fact that Strom Thurmond was too old, and people talked about Supreme Court justices that fell asleep on the bench. You know, well, here we have it right in front of us, and we still elect it. You know, how do we reconcile that in our brain? You know,
Go ahead, Indiana.
Yeah. I saw one blurb on might have been Twitter someplace, but that the, you know, the exit polls, they didn't think inflation was the fault of the Democrats. Like, if you guys remember Milton Friedman,
that's a Republican failure. If that's true.
Yeah,
the Republicans need to do a better job of explaining. I mean, and Milton Friedman was Reagan's advisor, and he basically said that only Washington, inflation is made in Washington because only Washington can create money. Consumers don't produce it. Producers don't produce it. I mean, why don't we do a better job of explaining that? It's these massive bills, but it doesn't seem like we do that. Now, the Dems have the media, you know, helping them, but I always think of, like, Charlie Kirk and, you know, those young guys. They go into these they do a great job of explaining things are, you know, don't work, or to these college kids. I think we need more of that for the voters.
Yeah. Mike, what were you saying?
No, I mean, I think that's right. I think that's a messaging failure by Republicans. And I, you know, what was, you know, and maybe this is part of the problem with the Fetterman race. We're all, you know, like, how could this happen? But what was Oz's big message? I really don't know.
Yeah, good point.
There was nothing memorable about this campaign. If we'd had a more dynamic candidate, and I'm not going to beat up on Oz. I mean, I thought he would win. I think he would have been a good senator, but there was no enthusiasm there. There was no message, and there was, in general, I don't feel like the Republicans. This should have been an incessant drumbeat about the economy and inflation, and crime.
Yeah,
and I think Zeldin made a good run of it. Just Democrats are. New York is just hopeless, you know, I think.
Yeah.
We won some House seats, and I think it partly due because he ran a good Senate race, you know, and lost by 4 or 5 points. But you just can't win statewide a Republican in New York. It's just not going to happen. But Pennsylvania, if we'd had a little more dynamic candidate, maybe a little more charismatic candidate, it might have been enough to pull that out.
Yeah. True. I mean, you know, Oz – you know, as a non-politician, Oz is no Trump. You know, Trump, you know, for all his faults over the years, you know, even 2016, when I thought he was going to lose the election, my brother Tommy and I talked about, he played it beautifully. That guy got more free publicity, more, you know, just by his actions and his statements. And so there, you know, that was a huge thing. And Oz didn't have that, you know, he didn't have that dynamic. And you made the point, Mike, what was Oz's platform? I don't know. I do remember Dana Lash one time on her show saying, you know, don't be so fooled by an Oz. You know, Oz is, you know, Oz being part of the medical community, the medical community is one of the biggest proponents of gun control. So, you know, there may have been people that thought, you know, on that issue that Oz wasn't really, truthful about stuff.
I think you're hitting on something. I do think that there was a lot of the, you know, you need to get that conservative part of your base out and enthusiastic. And I do think there were questions in their minds about, you know, just how much of a true conservative Oz was.
Yeah.
I think that was a problem.
Yeah. And it will continue to be.
But still, Fetterman, man, I think the Republicans took the view that, you know, there's no way they can vote for this guy. And you just can't, and Oz, I just think you can't make that assumption. And, you know, I think we all kind of fell in love with, you know, the constant the last few weeks. It's going to be a tsunami. Republicans, everything's looking great.
Yep.
And this is a lesson that you got to play like, no matter what, like you're 5 points behind, and you can't let up. You can't take anything for granted, you know, because all that matters is those votes coming in on election night.
Yeah, you got to play to the final whistle.
Exactly.
Simple as that. So
Democrats got their vote out, you know. I think that's another thing, you know, and I think that Indy Hawk hit on it. I think this abortion thing was a big deal, and I think this dishonest, disgusting attacks that we saw in the press as well as by Democrats and Biden about this, you know, democracy is at risk, you know, and Republicans are Nazis and Trump is Hitler. It just was so dishonest and so divisive.
Well, just the idea that they
got their people out.
Yeah, they're still running stuff that, you know, Republicans want to cut Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, and the lies. Yeah, just lies.
And they,
you know,
no Republican has ever
shameless.
Said it. But they say, well, look at Rick Scott's talking points as the chair of the National Senate, you know, Senatorial Campaign Committee. And then you read it, and it's like all he talks about is, you know, we're going to have to curb inflation. We're going to have to curb spending. And so we're going to have to be aware of, you know, especially as the population ages out, we're going to have to be aware of how Social Security and Medicare and those types of funds are managed. And so we'll have to shore them up, and we will have to manage them better. People take that as, oh, they're going to cut it. And they run with that. And media runs with that. You know, and that's another thing. I mean, do we, you know, we can sit and complain about media the whole time, but, you know, Republicans didn't get, it boils down to that. Republicans did not get their message out. It didn't do a good job of it. Nope. You know, it's simple as that. So let's move down to some ballot measures. Indy, did you have any local or state level ballot measures that were absolutely absurd? Or
no, nothing major in Indiana.
Really, Mike? How about you?
No, there were a couple things, and I don't know how they came out. I'll be blunt. There was one about Colorado, you have to remember, is very blue. I think there was one about a slight raise in the sales tax to help with roads or something. I think that may have passed. I didn't vote for it. But I think there was another. Oh, there was a cannabis measure out here that would have made it's already legal, but they were going to make it small use in public areas or something like that. And I think it actually that went down. But this Colorado's become more and more of a blue state, and I thought O'Day might, if it was a good night, which it wasn't the night we thought it would be, that he might have a shot, but you know, he lost by 10, 12 points. Republican Party's in trouble out in Colorado. You have to be honest about it. Democrats have all the major offices.
Yeah. Well, we had in Florida. We had one was a homestead exemption, increasing the homestead exemption for quote unquote some public workers. which you're thinking, okay, it failed. But here's what it said. The first thing it said, which includes classroom teachers. I mean, that thing was doomed to fail. You know, it needed to get 60%. It still got like 55% or something. But, I mean, what an absurd. I mean, literally, we are now playing with the homestead exemption for certain people. You know, and I'm not talking about retirees or vets. I mean, they're just talking like anyone, just public employees. I mean, what? How does that even make it to the ballot? You know, I don't understand. And then
sounds
another
like
one
for
was
a union back measure.
Oh yeah.
But
another
yeah,
one
well,
was changed.
Didn't pass.
Yeah, another one
that
was
doesn't
changed
sound like
proper
something that would fly in Florida.
No, another one was change property tax rules for assessments on home improvements that are done for flood resistance. In other words, if you do put in a flood retainer wall or whatever, that would be exempt from your assessment. And it failed. And I voted against it because it's like, are we kidding here? I mean, that's going to become so subjective. Orange County had a rent control thing that actually passed, but it's in court, so it doesn't take effect yet because there have been some lawsuits about it. And then the last one, Orange County had a 1% transportation surtax. And, you know, they had a half penny sales tax years ago. They had a 1% sales tax years ago, half for schools and half for these projects that was going to be managed by a committee of six people. That failed. Well, now we've had the extra half cent education tax for a while. Well, they wanted a 1% transportation surtax, and that failed, thank God. I mean, that was just, you know, I don't know how some of this stuff even gets to the ballot. I mean, it's just
– Well, you know, I think that's another problem because you get all these ballot measures every 2 years, and the average person just doesn't know what the hell is going – you know, you sit there and try to read the – I mean, I have to admit, I just read the paragraph, and I sometimes I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So I just – you know, rather than vote wrong – just won't vote, but I think the average person is like gets confused by these, doesn't pay attention to them. I'm not sure that's a really good way to or for a democracy to function.
Yeah,
and they're trying to do this because they can't get it through the legislature, so they think they can just do it as a ballot initiative.
Well, I mean, and they do it at the right times too. I mean, this was not a general election; otherwise, those might have passed because they would have worked harder in a general election. So. I don't know. End result, we're coming up on our time because we've done the hour and a half that I wanted. I mean, I thought we might run to 2 hours, but I figured let's just cut it off. Plus, I got to get ready for a tropical storm that's coming in. So, but end result, Mike, what do you think happens? What are a couple races? You think Kerry Lake wins?
Yeah, I do think Kerry Lake's going to win. Blake Masters, I'm not as confident about, but we'll see what happens there. I think Laxalt is going to pull it out, and I think so. I think it may come down to Herschel, and Republicans do have a shot at the Senate, but at least with the House, even a small majority, they can stop the Trump and the Democratic agenda, and they can investigate.
Yeah, that's really key is investigating. I mean, it's you know. So right now they're showing. One thing I'm seeing, they're showing 48. GOP, 46 Dem, and of course there's two independents. So that's effectively 48-48. And I think, has Wisconsin been called
think,
for Rod Johnson?
Hank, I think you're
49.
They're not including Alaska because they're in a, you know, the vote's still coming in, but it's going to be, it's two Republicans running against each other up there, so.
Right. Yeah. So.
It's 49,
and
really.
Yeah, so Wisconsin, they're calling. They've called Ron Johnson, I guess.
Yes.
Yes.
See, I didn't realize that. I thought that was still. Laxalt is down.
48.
Yeah, Laxalt is down 51.2 to 49.9 with 77%.
Oh, he's down. I did not know that.
Oh no! I'm sorry. No.
He's up.
Mark Kelly is up. Laxalt. They're still showing him. He's Nevada, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're still showing that they're showing him leading. So.
Yeah.
3 points left, I saw. It was 77%.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brother just texted me that Kerry Lake's now within 3,900 votes with 73%. So there's still over a quarter of the vote out, and she's gaining fast.
Cool.
That's awesome. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I guess from the House standpoint, it's what are they showing right now? They're showing now 207 to 183. So
yeah,
so far
RCP has it 208 to 188 with Republicans up 8. So up 8. So that's over 220. So I think the House is looking pretty good. I mean, as far as who's going to control it.
Yeah. And while they don't have a, you know, a veto-proof whatever, you know, in the Senate, even if they took the Senate, they, you know, it's still, especially in the House, it's important because the House, you know, would then have control of those oversight and investigative committees. And that's, you know, that I think has to be done. I mean, they have to investigate more of this stuff. So we shall see. Okay, guys, I'm going to run and get going. Thanks for being on. And, you know, next week, maybe we'll have a little bit more and we can talk a little bit about, you know, obviously more football, but also talk about a little bit of what we're seeing in terms of, you know, how much of this is shaken out. So, and go from there. So, yeah. Hey, go Hawks this weekend. And I will talk to you guys via text, of course.
Be safe, Hank.
Cool.
Yeah, be safe and take care, Hank.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for being on.
You bet.
So there you have it, folks, our election special, which turned out to be an election not so special. But it is what it is right now. Looks like the Republicans will gain control of the House. And we got at least a runoff in Georgia. So we'll have to see how it ends up shaking out. I want to thank Mike and Ken, Indy Hawk, for being here. And I want to thank Sue for listening on the line and for her call and her questions. And T. Bodie was late to the party, but he did get in here. Indy Hawk was also in the chat room. In the meantime, folks, I got to get ready. I got a tropical storm coming, and we do have to get ready. They're telling us to – actually, they said, I think it's a 5 tonight, stay in your cars or stay in your house. Don't go out. So in the meantime, I'm going to get ready do that. In the meantime, be back next week. Hope you all could be here. Be safe if you're in Florida with this storm coming. And be safe in general out there, folks. There's some crackpots out there. We've seen it in California, obviously, but we're seeing it in Pennsylvania with the election of John Fetterman. So, folks, have a great rest of the week. Have a great weekend, and we will be back next Wednesday. Have a great one, and we will send you out with our normal theme song. Night, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.